This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Characters and characterization are a key ingredient for interpreting the Bible, and perhaps no other book in the Bible is so full of challenging and outlandish characters as the Book of Judges. From Ehud, the left-handed assassin, to the zany adventures of Samson, the characters in Judges are memorable indeed. Join us as we talk with Benjamin Johnson about his co-edited work, Characters and Characterization in Judges. You're listening to New Books in Biblical Studies, a channel of the New Books Network, and I'm your host, Michael Morales. Benjamin Johnson is Associate Professor of Biblical Studies and Director of the Honors College at Letourneau University. Benjamin, welcome to New Books in Biblical Studies.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So, Ben, you've worked in the area of characters and characterization for other books of the Bible on Samuel and Kings. What sparked your interest in this area of biblical studies?
It's a long story. I'll make it as short as I can, but it probably goes back to childhood. As a kid, my mom was always trying to get me to read the Bible. And one of her ways to kind of trick me into it was sending me to places in the Bible that she thought would interest an 11, 12-year-old. So I remember very vividly reading Judges 3, the story of Ehud, the left-handed judge. And here's this guy who's an assassin who's hiding a sword and is slaying a fat king, and he stabs the fat king, and the folds of his fat go over the blade and the dirt comes out, and he sneaks out, and his attendants think he must be relieving himself. And as an 11, 12-year-old, you're just thinking, that can't be in the Bible. What else is in the Bible? And so that kind of tactic of getting me interested in biblical stories starts all the way back as a kid. And then probably in grad school, as I was pursuing academic study of the Bible for the first time, it was reading Robert Alter's The Art of Biblical Narrative. And that kind of woke me up to a different way of appreciating specifically Old Testament narrative. And that's kind of always grasped me and been my entryway into appreciating the Bible. And I think specifically characters, it's always been that fascination. There's something fundamental to our experience of reading narrative, of relating to characters, whether it's, you know, characters we love or characters we love to hate. I mean, how often have you recommended a book or something to somebody and it's been because you really got into the characters? And I wonder if maybe we should appreciate the Bible a little bit more that way, appreciating the story, appreciating the artistic way the message is told. And I really think that characters are a key entry point. I've become more and more convinced that the way we read characters in Old Testament story really does nuance the way we interpret what the story is trying to do. And I found that experience across editing these various volumes on characters in the Old Testament that contributors have regularly said to me, man, I really had fun writing that chapter. Wow, I really enjoy getting to dive into that character. And I feel like it allows us as biblical scholars to engage in the material in the way sometimes our discipline or our guild doesn't necessarily encourage us to do. So I've been very encouraged by people's response to writing and contributing to these books. And I've been encouraged in getting to read different attempts at wrestling with these really fascinating characters in the Bible. I think appreciating that has been, you know, a great thing that I've gained because of these projects.
Tell us how this book on characters and characterization came together, and why these topics are so crucial for the Book of Judges in particular.
Yeah, so this is the third in a set of books that Keith Bodner and I have edited together on characters and characterization in the Old Testament. And the impetus actually was when I was working at Wycliffe Hall. I was teaching at Wycliffe Hall in Oxford. And as you may know, when you're at a small theological college, you get asked to do a little bit of everything. So I was, my official title was Tutor in Biblical Interpretation. And so I had to give lectures on the Gospel of John. And at the time, it was 2012, 13, somewhere around there, I was engaging with Gospel of John studies, and I came across a number of works on characters in John. Specifically, Christopher Skinner edited a volume called Characters and Characterization in the Book of John, or in the Gospel of John. And it really unlocked John's gospel for me in a new way, that so much of John's gospel is Jesus encountering various characters, whether that's Nicodemus in chapter 3 or the woman of Samaria in chapter 4 or Pilate later in chapter 18, that a real entry point into that gospel is the way Jesus encounters and engages with various characters. And I just couldn't help but think, man, the Old Testament has so many cool characters that we need to wrestle with, and that the Old Testament narrative deserved that kind of focused study. And so Keith Bodner was a friend of mine, and he has done several volumes on characters in the Old Testament. He did one on Jeroboam, on Elisha, Absalom. And so we just got to talking about it. We thought, yeah, we got to give this a try, and had great success recruiting people. People seem to want to contribute to these volumes. So we started with Samuel and Kings, and then we felt like Judges definitely deserved some attention, because the book of Judges is so character driven. You know, if you read a survey of scholarship on the book of Judges, and there's been a couple different ones in Currents and Biblical Research, that article, or that journal, if you read those, they're always arranged by characters, right? Because the narrative itself is kind of character story by character story by character story. And so it just lends itself to require character analysis to appreciate the book. When it comes to understanding the book of Judges as a whole, there's been kind of different moves. Historically, interpreters have interpreted a little more atomistically, you know, each segment interpreting on its own. But recent studies have begun to appreciate the shape of the book as a whole, and seeing kind of a slow degradation from Othniel, the first judge, who is pretty boring and just is the cookie cutter judge, but is paradigmatic for that reason, to seeing a slow degradation of the judges and Israelite society down to those final chapters in Judges 17 to 21, where it's an utter breakdown of everything. It's an utter breakdown of Israelite religion. It's an utter breakdown of Israelite society. And it ends up in, as I tell my students, just chaos and carnage. And so appreciating that there may be a movement in the book of Judges, but then there's been pushback against that as well. And the crux of it really is, how do we interpret the way the various judges are being portrayed? Can we see a movement from a paradigmatic Othniel down to a maybe questionable Gideon, down to a really, what is this guy doing as a hero of Israel, Samson? And that movement, to see that, it's dependent on how we read the characters. And so depending on what we see in each given judge, how they're characterized, really does have a fair amount to say how we treat the literary product of the book of Judges as a whole.
Your contribution is on Abimelech, technically Israel's first king. Would you tell us about some of your findings?
Yeah, Abimelech is an interesting character. He's a bit unique in the book of Judges. Judges in that he's not a judge. His story doesn't follow the standard pattern of the book of Judges. He's never called a judge. He is the son of Gideon, who famously refuses what looks like kingship, but then kind of acts like a king, right? He's, no, the Lord is your king. I'm not going to be king, but, you know, I wouldn't mind a tithe of your spoils, and I'm going to name my son Abimelech, who very probably his name means my father is king. Which is a little suspect. So Abimelech is a unique character, and in some ways, what I saw in him was you see a sort of canonization of Abimelech. He's introduced to us as half Shechemite, And he fulfills the function in Judges the way other foreign kings do. So, you know, he kills his 70 brothers, which feels like a match of Adonai Bezek earlier in the book, who defeats 70 kings and cuts off their thumbs. So he feels a little bit like the foreign king, even though he's an Israelite. His coup seems to be Baal sponsored. So what you see in Abimelech is this half Israelite character that's taking on some of the trappings and some of the problems of Israel's struggle with Canaanites. One of the key characteristics of Abimelech is his lack of loyalty. You know, you could call it in biblical terms a lack of chesed towards anyone, that term of loving kindness and covenant loyalty. I mean, he's introduced by making a sales pitch to Shechem. Wouldn't it be better for me? I'm your brother. I'm flesh and blood with you. Wouldn't it be better for me to rule over you? That he's making this appeal to his bonds of kinship to the Shechemites, while at the same time he's hoping to betray his 70 brothers, right? So the great irony of appealing to bonds of kinship while at the same time betraying another bond of kinship. He's absolutely characterized as someone to whom loyalty seems to be a matter of convenience, not a matter of character, which I think is important for where the story of Judges goes eventually. So we see in Abimelech the problem that we see in the Israelites in the book of Judges generally, of this slow Canaanization, this lack of loyalty, especially in those latter chapters of the book of Judges. One of the interesting things that I found is I thought I knew the story of Abimelech, and he's a bad guy. But there's a couple of hints in there that there's an additional critique, not just a critique against Abimelech, but a critique against some of the other characters in the story. When he makes the pitch for being king over the Shechemites, he gives this, which is better, for one to rule over you, or for all the 70 sons of Gideon, Jerubbaal to rule over you, which makes it seem like it's a counter proposal. Like, are the other sons of Gideon trying to rule over Shechem? We don't have it in the story. It feels like a bit of a narrative gap. And so we're just sort of left with that. And then when you get to Jotham's parable, of course, you know, Abimelech betrays his brother, hires some worthless fellows, slaughters all of his brothers. Jotham's parable has been read as a critique of kingship, carte blanche, which it kind of feels like that. But if the way the parable goes, it actually also feels like a critique of the request for kingship. You know, if you read, it's the trees who are initiating finding someone to rule over them, right? Whether it be the olive tree, the fig, or the vine, and they keep objecting. And you know, why would Jotham offer that criticism? And so scholars have said, well, it doesn't quite fit the context. It's been added differently, or have tried to reinterpret the parable to fit the narrative context. But I actually wondered if the parable helps us fill out something that might be missing from the narrative, that, you know, why a critique of the request for kingship? Well, because maybe there was behind the story a request for kingship. And it's a warning about that, because what kind of person takes up the kingship? Well, very often it's a person like Abimelech. And it's not these other people who seem to have something to offer. And so that's really interesting if you play that forward in the former prophets, where, of course, the people are going to later request a king, and God is going to be at best lukewarm about it and not entirely happy. And so that warning about kingship and that warning about a request for kingship was, I think, more of a surprise as I was digging into the story than when my own like previous familiarity with it. So those are some of the things that I think jumped out at me as very, very interesting in the character of Abimelech, and in the way his story fits with this really interesting parable in the midst of it, that it's this warning about the kind of person that would become king. I mean, that parable is hilarious in that they go from plant to plant trying to find someone to sway over them, however you interpret that verb there. And they keep objecting because they seems like they've got, you know, the olive tree's got a better job to do, producing olives, which produces oil. The fig has a better job to do, producing fruit, which is very beneficial. The vine has a better job to do, producing fruit, which produces wine. And it's almost like this idea that kingship is for those who don't have anything better to offer. You know, that old adage that those who can't do teach. It's a little bit of a warning that those who have nothing better to do might rule. And that you end up with a bramble, that a bramble is dangerous to have over you. And essentially that's what turns out to be the case with Abimelech. And as the story of kings in the narrative of Israel goes, it doesn't turn out so well generally. So kingship is a dangerous experiment. And I think you see that in Abimelech.
So how would you say the story of Abimelech fits into the message of Judges?
I think the story of Abimelech is actually crucial to understanding the book of Judges. Without the story of Abimelech, it would really be easy to read the Judges as these, you know, anti-heroes that are slowly getting worse as we go through the narrative. And then by the time you get to Judges 17 to 21, these stories of where everything just breaks down, the refrain in those stories is that line that's repeated, you know, four times in some version of it. In those days, there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in their own eyes. And so it clearly seems to set up the conclusion of the book. The problem is that refrain, there's no king in Israel. Everyone is doing what is right in their own eyes. And so you get to that and you think, well, the answer must be kingship. And so you could easily read Judges as just a pure pro-monarchical, life is terrible, but won't it be great when David gets here? The story of Abimelech, right in the center of the book of Judges, problematizes that simple reading a little bit, right? How can you have a book that ends with, oh, we wish we had a king, if in the center of it, the first experiment with kingship was an unmitigated disaster? And so that story of Abimelech kind of problematizes a simple pro-monarchical reading of the book of Judges. And so you have to go back and put it together. And that's led some to say, well, maybe that refrain in Judges 17 to 21 means that in those days, God wasn't king in Israel. And that should be what it is. And that could be in the background, but it does feel like human leadership is necessary. And given that the book of Samuel is going to follow next, it just naturally leads us to asking that question about kingship. So then what is the story of Abimelech doing? It's at the very least warning us about kingship, right? So it makes Judges' portrayal of kingship more complicated, right? There may be a need for it. Right? Society's breaking down. You have this vendetta violence, which is such a problem at the end of the book of Judges. And so we need some social order. We need leadership. Kingship is a solution to it. But within that same book, you have a warning. But be warned, you might need that kind of kingship. But it's got to be a certain kind of person. It's got to be a certain kind of king that could effectively be a help in Israel. Because as much as no leadership can lead to chaos and carnage, the wrong leadership can lead to chaos and carnage. And so Judges, I think, then portrays a more mixed portrayal of human kingship in the story of Israel. Which, of course, is fitting with the ideology of the Hebrew Bible in general. If you go back to Deuteronomy 17, where, you know, God says, when you ask for a king, because you will, you can have one, but it can't look like kings tend to look like in the ancient Near East. It can't hold himself up over his brothers. It can't multiply wealth, multiply wives, send the people back to Egypt for horses. It can't do all of these things that monarchs in the ancient Near East tend to do. Instead, it must be a king who is subservient to God's law. And so from the very beginning, it seems to me that the Old Testament has a nuanced and complicated view of kingship. And the book of Judges, when you include the story of Abimelech, tells a similar story, right? We might need it. We might need the institution of kingship, but there's a warning there, much like Samuel gives a warning in 1 Samuel 8 and 1 Samuel 12, that, you know, you're asking for a king, be warned, you might get what you ask for. You ask for a king like the other nations, and Abimelech is the epitome of a king like the other nations. So I think that the narrative of Abimelech right at that center point of the book of Judges really does nuance what we see as the message of Judges in its literary whole, which I think has a much more complicated view of the role of kingship in Israel than is sometimes said. I don't think it's purely pro-monarchical, but it's also not purely anti-monarchical. It's got a nuanced stance, which I think is consistent with the portrayal in the whole Old Testament.
Benjamin, what else are you working on these days? Any more books on characters and characterization?
We're pausing for a moment. There would be, you know, great further projects and characters and characterization. You know, Keith and I have done three of these, you know, pretty rapid fire, and editing books takes a lot of energy. Genesis would be fantastic. There's great characters in Genesis. You know, Exodus through Numbers, there's some great characters there. IBR session on Chronicles this next year is on characters and characterization in Chronicles. So other people are thinking about these kinds of things. And so I look forward to doing more work on that. So we'll see if there's further of these kinds of volumes in the future. I'm still working in the area of the historical books of the Old Testament. I'm working on a couple of commentaries. I'm venturing into Chronicles for the first time, which is a little outside my former prophet's realm, but has interesting overlap. So I'm working on a commentary on Chronicles for Lexham's Evangelical Exegetical Commentary Series. And then I'm working on a commentary on Samuel for the Baker Commentary on the Old Testament. So those are the two kind of major projects that are taking my attention. Although I don't want to get away from this character study, I'm toying around with popularizing some of the stuff that we've done in characters and writing a more popular volume on characters as an entry point into the Old Testament story, because I think that's the other thing that has been so fun about this project is character study communicates so well at a range of levels. You can do really detailed academic study of the Bible by looking at characters, but also it works in a church, in a Sunday school, in even kids' Sunday school setting. I think it's a fascinating entry point. I've taught a class on biblical narrative a couple of times at Laternal University where I teach, and I have had as an assignment a character analysis assignment for one of their major papers, and the students all go, "Oh, that was so fun. I got to study my favorite character, or I got to study this character that I'd never really studied before." And so I think it's something that deserves a little bit more popular portrayal. So I would like to collect some of the work that we've done on characters and put out something that's a little more popular. And then I think I also want to, I'm trying to press forward. I wrote a chapter in the Samuel volume called Character as Interpretive Crux in the Book of Samuel. And I think I'm going to kind of tease that out into more of a book to argue that thesis that characters are really centrally important for interpreting biblical narrative. And the fact that we have, you know, ambiguous characters and characters are complicated, I think helps us understand what is biblical narrative doing? Why would you have this kind of ambiguity in biblical narrative? What it is, you know, to move past the art of biblical narrative or the poetics of biblical narrative and get towards what is the work of biblical narrative? What is it trying to accomplish to us readers? And using characters as a way to tease that out. So those are some of the projects that I'm kind of spinning forward from some of this work.
Benjamin, what a joy to talk about the Book of Judges with you. Thank you for your good work and for being with us on the show.
Thanks for having me. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Friends, you've been listening to New Books in Biblical Studies, a channel of the New Books Network. See you next time.